thatgreatbusinessshow.com is brought to you by DeFacto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Welcome to That Great Business Show, episode 53, posting on the 24th of September, 2021. That number 53 of a weekly podcast means we've made it to year two of what you, our listeners, kindly refer to as Ireland's best business podcast. I'm Conal O'Moran, and I'm joined today by a very, very special co-host. Our first ever guest on episode one was Susan Spence, founder of worldwide successful software company Sofco. So who better to have back to co-present the podcast on what could be episode one of year two? Then the She Who Knows Business Backwards, Susan Spence, welcome back to That Great Business Show.
Thank you, Conal. And I hope it is as enjoyable as the first episode.
Can you remember? It's year ago.
Sorry, I can, because do you know why? The first question you asked me, my response was, Conal, I haven't a clue what you're asking me.
And that's why we have you back, because you say it as it is. So we have an hour of Susan Spence and some other guests coming up. So let's get down to business. In a minute, we'll be talking about the law of unintended consequences, how Ulster Bank's withdrawal from the Irish market could wreck a very important save-as-you-earn scheme. From Nina in County Tipperary, we have an aesthetician. I knew I wouldn't be able to say that word. Anyway, she makes beauty products, bringing her active skin formulas to the world. And we know that Big Brother is watching our every move, but Dublin-based software company Glimpse wants to go even further and give large and small shopkeepers much deeper intelligence about the makeup, habits and patterns of their in-store customers. And a family member of a well-known house builder tells us why she ran away from the family firm, but then decided to rejoin and start building what she says are healthy houses. That's all coming up in the next hour. But as always, we acknowledge our wonderful sponsor, DeFacto Shaving Oil, makers of the world's best shaving oil. Their support brings you the best business insights every week. So do the right thing, back them by buying their product, now that we're travelling again, their 50ml bottle of all-natural shaving oil is your ideal travelling companion.
That Great Business Show.
Now, many of you may not have heard of a save-as-you-earn, or SAYE scheme, as some prefer to call it, but you should. In a nutshell, these revenue-approved schemes were introduced in 1999. They allow employees to opt in on a risk-free basis to save from their after-tax salary on a monthly basis, and acquire an option to buy shares in their employer or its parent company at a discount of up to 25% of the market price. Now, employees choose whether to take up the option at the end of the savings period, could be either 3 or 5 years, and any gain realised on the exercise of the option is exempt from income tax. Oh, happy days. That is the good news. The bad news is that the withdrawal of Ulster Bank from the Irish market leaves the viability of these schemes in a precarious position, as no Irish licensed bank is available to act as a savings carrier to facilitate the schemes. Those SAYE schemes are mostly relevant to larger companies, but we will be talking about share options for smaller companies as well. All of the above is scalding the hearts of our first two guests. Kivi Ryan, partner at law firm A&L Goodbody, who is also on the board of the Irish ProShare Association, and Sean McKeown, company secretary at the Dalata Hotel Group. Welcome to you both to That Great Business Show. Kivi, what seems to be the problem?
Hi, Conal and Susan, and thanks for having us. So, as you said, Conal, yes, with the exit of Ulster Bank from the Irish market, there's a question mark now over the viability of SAYE schemes, because a requirement of the legislation is that the money which the employees save towards buying the options in their company shares where they're employed needs to be held in a savings carrier. So that can either be a bank, it can be the post office, it can be the credit union or such other arrangement as might be approved by the government. But up until now, the only carrier that has been holding these savings has been Ulster Bank. So with their exit, we now are in a, I suppose, a territory where we don't know what will happen in the future to SAYE. And at the Irish Pro Share Association, we're asking the government to look and see if they can come up with a solution to mean that these SAYE schemes can be continued by companies, because they're an incredibly important retention and recruitment tool. They're super benefits for employees, but also the businesses.
Why only Ulster Bank? Surely the so-called pillar banks, our AIB, our Bank of Ireland, all those great people, they should be adapting this and facilitating this.
We'd love the government to encourage the other banks to look at this. And indeed, before the financial crash, Bank of Ireland and AIB both had operated these SAYE schemes, or were saving carriers. And then they withdrew and handed them over to Ulster Bank. There's other solutions out there, however, that we've recommended to the government. So, for example, an arrangement could be put in place to allow a state savings carrier to hold the savings, so an NTMA arrangement. Or indeed, even simpler than that, potentially you could look at allowing the company itself to hold the funds in a designated bank account. Or even look at allowing some of the non-EEA banks, so, you know, Ulster Bank's parent, NatWest, may potentially, well, I can't speak for them, but, you know, there may be an arrangement that could be put in place, because the reality is SAYE is also a share incentive programme in the UK. And lots of UK companies who have businesses here in Ireland operate these schemes, and it may be, there may be a possibility for other banks out there to enter the market here.
Kivi, maybe I misunderstand this, but my understanding is that this particular scheme is really only geared for very, very big companies, because you have to have all the employees opt into it. And then when people leave, it's really a nightmare in terms of administration. So therefore, the SMEs kind of can't really take advantage of this. Should we not be looking at the government to once and for all put in a proper share option scheme? Because you mentioned talent there. Mm. Like, how do we compete against some of the bigger companies internationally?
Yeah,
we really have nothing to offer them.
It's a really good point, Susan. And we have something there. It's called the Keep the Key Employee Engagement Programme. And it was introduced a number of years ago to replicate the EMI scheme in the UK, which is for high growth and SME companies. Unfortunately, the way it's been drafted, it's, in our view at the IPSA, is that it's overly complicated, and it is difficult for smaller companies to go out and get their high street advisors to implement this for them. So again, we're asking the government to look at that and to try and simplify it and try and make it more user friendly. And with the budget coming up in the next few weeks now, it's the perfect opportunity to put those reforms in place.
Sean McKeown, you are here because you are hands-on, a user of the SAYE scheme. Why or how do you use it, and to what effect, and what will Ulster Bank's withdrawal, doesn't have to be Ulster Bank, anybody's withdrawal, what does it mean to you or to the scheme that you're running at the latter?
Well, thank you, Conal and Susan, for having me. I'm delighted to be here. We've been listed since 2014, and soon after we listed, Kivi was in my ear saying, you know, you need to think about this. And when I spoke to Pat McCann about it, he says, I've already thought about it. Why haven't you already done it, Sean? So you described the way the scheme works very well. And it's very simple. So savers who started with us in 2016, for example, would have their savings matured 3 years later in 2019. And they had something like a 50% gain on that simple savings plan. It's as simple as that. There's no risk to them. If it happened that the share price was poorer than the exercise price, they simply take their savings back. And in of our group of at full flight, as I say, we're still not up to full flight yet in the hotel business. We had approximately 5,000 employees, and we had upwards of 1,000 of our employees participating in the SAYE. And many recruits this year, I've been re-recruiting, we're looking forward to participating, and we've been promoting it as part of our incentive and our remuneration plans. It is for listed companies, and it works for listed companies, but it's so simple, and it's a win-win all sides up. And you know, so if you want to be philosophical about this, you can think about, you know, the arguments about, you know, the return to labour versus the return to capital. But it's a very simple way for employees to participate in the capital, and savers for as little as €12 a month. So we have people who are cleaning rooms, who are serving tables, who are saving in our SAYE and have the possibility of that benefit. They have the possibility of the same benefit that the shareholder has. It's so simple.
Are we arguing over nothing here, though? Because if I understand it, if the government were that way inclined, a tick of a box could change all of this. Do remember that we kind of do own AIB still. So AIB, you just ring up Colin Hunt and say, Colin, do this. Don't ask him, just say, do this. Kiwi.
Yeah, I mean, that's one solution. And as I said, at IPSA, we've given the government a menu of alternatives that can be looked at. So, you know, we would love if AIB and Ulster Bank and the other banks are listening, you know, to consider this. But if that is not, if that's not a viable alternative, there are other solutions we think out there that could be looked at.
But what's the holdup? I never understand this. Like, what
does
these people
do? It's red tape.
Red tape. Why? Is it not just?
It's too difficult between regulation and stuff. So we go to a new carrier. They're going to have to apply for a license. They're going to have to go through a process
given to them by the government that has implemented this in the first place. It doesn't add up. Or as Kiwi said, go to NatWest and say, NatWest, you're already doing this. Just run it for us. Or NTMA. What else? What else do they do?
It's as simple as that, Colin.
I know. That's what I'm asking.
Is the government reticent because there's too few in it, too few companies in it?
I just think it's at the moment, because of negative interest rates, there's no incentive for the banks to get involved in offering a product which is going to lose money out of the bat. And okay, I'm sure that the interest rate environment will change, but it's a very simple product. There's no sides to this. You're asking me, what's the missing piece? What are we not getting? Nothing.
But they can charge a fee if there's no money in it for them. Just charge a fee and it all gets done, sorted. No, Kiwi? You're looking at me as if I have two heads.
No,
three heads.
No, I just think that, you know, any new... I mean, the reality is this is an existing programme. It's not like when we went to the government to look for the introduction of Keep, where that was a completely new incentive. This is something that's already in place. And it would be a real shame when we look at our competitiveness in a post-Brexit environment to lose this. Because if you're an employee in Dundalk and your colleague up the road in Newry has this benefit, you know, that's something we shouldn't be losing out. So look, we would agree with you, Conal. This is an easy fix and we just need the right people in the Department of Finance to listen to our budgets or read our budget submission and listen to what Sean and I are saying today.
We agree. That's why
absolutely,
you're here.
Absolutely. And you must find it now from everybody suffers from talent, trying to get and keep really good talent. So it has to be a differentiator for you, you know, and you're a massive organisation. So.
Well, absolutely. And particularly, you know, when people talk about talent, you're inclined to think of people that are at the upper end of an organisation. But talent right through our organisation is important to us. And in our sector, the sector is trying to rebuild its talent. We've lost a lot of people out of the hotel sector and the tourism sector who have transferable skills who've gone to other industries. And we promoted the availability of our SOE as a differentiator when we were re-recruiting this year. And we feel we're letting people down because we can't do this. And we've even taken the call. We could continue in the UK, but we don't want one side to be out of step with the other. So we're really urgently looking for a solution. We'll find a solution, but we need support. And I would really appeal to the banks who have the capacity to do it to work with us. And I'd be delighted to talk to them and explain to them that we can do this simply.
Phone number for Colin Hunt. That's all you need. And going back to what we also mentioned at the very beginning, onto the KEEP program. Mm-hmm. The KEEP program is absolutely essential, if I understand it. And Susan, I'm glad you're going to throw this at you as my co-host.
No problems.
Because...
now, by the way, I'm meant to ask the questions. You promised me I was going to ask the questions this time.
Because you run a very successful tech company, a tech-based company, you are a living example of you are in competition with the Googles, the Facebooks, and.
Absolutely.
So talk to me about how painful
is
that?
It's really difficult because, you know, we are, being a tech company, very hard to attract software developers. That's why part of our development is actually in Scandinavia to try and, you know, balance it out to get people. We find we're definitely at a disadvantage, particularly in the US, where you're trying to attract people because everybody in the US is part of some employee share option scheme. Mm-hmm. So if they sell in the future, they all get a windfall out of it. And we actually have nothing here that makes sense, that's easy to administer, that means that when somebody eventually gets to the stage of selling their business, that there is something in it for the employees as well as the business. Mm-hmm. So at the moment, everything that you have is just taxed at the normal, you know, tax rate, which is just not what we're trying to do. And it's become a competitive issue. It's like what you were saying, Sean, you know, you have to have something in terms of a competitive edge, or at least being able to have a level playing pitch, you know, that you can compete on. So I think that whole area has got to be part of the government's strategy for recovery. Mm-hmm. We can't be the poor relation.
Absolutely.
KV Ryan, mm-hmm. the easy question to you. As part of the Irish ProShare Association, IPSA, mm-hmm. you have been banging on about this for a very long time. And nothing to do with IPSA now, but nothing has happened about it. Mm-hmm. Explain, what is it within government? I do not know the answer to this. What is it in within administration that they just don't get it, won't do it? Tick the box, it costs the country zip. And then it can attract a lot of good people.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose we need to hear more stories from business like Susan and like Sean articulating so clearly as Susan did, you know, the competitive impact that not having a viable scheme has. And particularly during the COVID crisis when many businesses, you know, had, you know, difficulties around cash or perhaps they're looking to attract in skill sets that they might not have needed before. Being able to give equity to your employees is a really important recruitment and retention tool. So I think, you know, I would say to any businesses in a particular area, you know, get on to your local politician or your local minister or TD about this, because as soon as they start to understand the impact that this is having on your business, then they will realise that, look, this is a no-brainer. These changes should be made. There's no negative consequences for the Exchequer. Indeed, it would only have positive consequences for Ireland Inc. overall. So that would be my view. We'd like to just get more and more businesses to articulate why this is important to them. Because, yeah, listening to lawyers and accountants all day probably isn't the most convincing angle.
But you have no axe to grind. You are just, well, in my estimation, you just are saying it as it is.
Yeah.
And I hope, Sean, sorry.
The other thing I would say is that amongst us in listed companies, we have a leadership job to do as well. And my research around it, it's interesting that most of the well-known companies who have SAYE schemes are relatively recently listed companies. So the big traditional listed companies don't have SAYE schemes, which I am really surprised about. And I would call out to every CEO in an Irish listed company and think about why they don't have an SAYE scheme, because they should. And that should help to start the movement as well. Because it's simple. It doesn't cost. Shareholders love it. Big shareholders love to have their investee companies work
of the action.
Yeah, that yeah. That people are engaged, and it does develop that engagement.
Yeah, skin in the game.
And back to you, Susan. Again, sorry to be asking you the co-host these questions.
That's okay. Yeah.
Genuinely, is how difficult is it to pitch against the Googles and the Facebook space? I also know that the accountants are feeling the pinch there as well, because the big US companies are also sucking up the accountants. Isn't that right?
Yeah, but as well as that, you know, quite often you try and get around this by saying we'll bring in graduates, for example, right? And you train them for a few years only to lose them to the likes of Amazon, etc. So it is incredibly hard to compete in that arena. It's not just about a lack of talent. It's also about you train people up and then you lose them. So really something dramatic has to happen, because we can't continue like this, because, you know, we want to grow. Businesses want to grow. The government wants us to, you know, bring in more people and expand, pay them more in terms of taxes, etc. We can't do that if we can't find the people, if you can't retain the people, then it stymies your growth.
Somebody doesn't get this. Kevi, I'm going to leave the last word with you. The budget is on the 12th, I think, 12th of October. How simple would it be for the government to address this between now and then? They always say, oh, we haven't, if only had told us. But I know that you've told them last year, the year before, the year before, the year before, the year before, etc.
Yeah, look, we've given the government the position around KEEP and the changes that we would recommend on that. And they're relatively straightforward. And so we would see those amendments, they could be implemented via the Finance Act. And in terms of SAYE, you know, we've discussed the changes around encouraging the other Irish banks to participate. But if that is not an option, a change to the legislation could be made via a ministerial order. So, yeah, it shouldn't be too complicated.
And that minister would be Pascal Donoghue, wouldn't it be?
Yes.
And I do believe that Pascal probably does understand this and could actually... He probably gets it.
Yes.
Conal, you need to invite him onto the show.
I would love
to. Let's bring him in.
I do normally avoid having politicians only on, because I love practitioners. You know, people like sure. Sean or Keevy, or you. I believe you do a bit of work as well.
Not again, besides my golf.
So, listen, maybe, Keevy, Sean, that we might come back in 3 weeks' time, happy days, because it is absolutely essential. There's another thing which I know is outstanding that hasn't been mentioned yet. There are a lot of, and you may also know this, Susan, a lot of the tech engineers, software engineers, are going home. Home being Poland, Lithuania, Estonia, etc. Little bit of maths. They earn on average 120,000 euro. 100,000 of them going home is 120 million. Less tax in Ireland, roughly 50%, 60 million. Make that 5,000 people. Suddenly you're looking at a quarter of a billion of a hole for no good reason unless we keep them here.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really hard. We're actually looking for engineers at the moment, software engineers. It is incredibly hard to find people in that area. And even other software companies are saying, look, we're going as far abroad as South America to get people and try and bring them into the country. So there's a massive gap there in the software industry alone. What is it like in every other industry? And Sean, you must be the same in your business also.
Yeah. We're looking to recruit chefs from all over the world, as an example.
There is a gap. Thank you, COVID, for yet again making business difficult. But listen, we'll get over it. Keevy Ryan of A&L Goodbody, Sean McKeown of Delata Hotel Group, thank you so much for joining myself and Susan. Susan, thank you very much for joining me in that chat.
Thank you. Thanks for the questions.
ISME is the independent SME association, looking after the interests of all types of businesses across Ireland. ISME membership includes invaluable HR and general advice, training, promotional tools, members' discounts, events, and networking with fellow SMEs. ISME membership starts from €195 with easy pay options. ISME. Join today at isme.ie or email membership@isme.ie. Backing great women-led businesses on every show. That Great Business Show.
I was having a look at an online auction site the other day where a lot on offer was a folder full of really interesting antique labels from a place called Slattery's Pharmacy in Castle Pollard, County Westmeath, probably 100 years old. And of those labels, one that jumped out at me was a blood purifying mixture that, and I quote, cures scurvy, scrofula, sores, eruptions of the skin, and all diseases that arise from an impure state of the blood. Now, fortunately, we have come a long, long way since those days of the cure-all in a bottle. In Nina County Tipperary, a qualified esthetician, see the way I've got that right? Geraldine Jones has set up her business called, very simply, Skin Formulas, that uses her different formulas to actually make some real difference to those with conditions involving hydration, aging, acne, pigmentation, redness, etc. However, I did notice nothing for baldies like me. The company is successful, gaining listings in Shaw's, that's the one that's almost nationwide, I'll always love that ad, and Mars Pharmacy chain, amongst others. And now, in the true spirit of Team GBS, that's the Great Business Show, Geraldine wants to get off the island and has the UK and US in her sights. Welcome to That Great Business Show, and Geraldine Jones.
Thank you so much, Conor.
I keep hearing my phone going off, so when while Susan asks you questions, I'm going to find my phone and switch it off. Over to you, Ms. Co-host.
Thank you so much, Conal. Look, I'm always fascinated. How do you I use the same cream for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. And how do you manage to get people to switch onto your product or off something they've been using for years and they just go, oh, look, this is what I've been using for years? I'm always fascinated with that.
Yeah, so I suppose with our product, we kind of have two angles that we approach the consumer with. So we have our salons and clinics who recommend the product directly to customers, and they would, I suppose, address the client's concerns when they come into them. So, you know, a client might say, you know, my skin is very dry. It's been dry for years. I can't seem to find something that works. But then if you ask them about the products they're currently using, they'll say, well, I have that 10 years and I love it. And they're very slow to switch until you point out maybe that product is not actually addressing what your concern is. So that's usually the angle that the professionals would take. What's unique about our product is if you're picking it up off the shelf in, say, Dunn Stores or Shaw's or one of our salons or clinics, we have everything you need to know about that product on the box. It essentially tells you exactly what it is, what skin indications it's for, whether you're dry, oily, congested, dehydrated. It tells you how to use it step by step. It tells you what stage of your routine you use the product, even down to how much of the product you need. So it's very, very user friendly. And that was my biggest thing as a professional, listening to customers' needs, having everything very, very clearly on the package and on the bottle itself was a huge drawing point to consumers when they were looking at the product on the shelf.
But does it cure scurvy, scrofula or sores?
Not just yet, but we're working on a new formulation.
A question, just a serious question, is in a way what Susan is asking as well is that the big players, and I'm not going to name them because they're not sponsoring me, but the big players are out there, surely they produce what you produce or something close to it. And if I were going into Mars or Dunn's, I would probably recognize that brand name and say, that's the one for me.
Yes, and I suppose the difference between, there's difference with some big players. So we have the big players who would be considered a cosmetic product. So those are the ones that you see advertised in every magazine. They're the ones that the consumers know about, but they're classed as a cosmetic product. So with their ingredients, the molecule is quite big. The pH is kind of neutral to the skin, so it can't penetrate in and actively do what they're saying they can do to a certain degree. Our product is a cosmeceutical, so it works at a much deeper level within the skin. The pH is lower, the molecule is smaller, so it's targeting the root and the cause of these particular skin concerns. So there's a kind of an education piece there, I suppose, for the consumers, trying to educate them on what the product can and can't do. And for us, I suppose, we're fighting that large marketing budget. But the difference is our products really deliver results. And our customers would often come to us with quite serious skin concerns and they see a difference. They see results and that's what kind of gives us the edge.
And we love real insights from smaller businesses because so many smaller businesses kind of share the same problem. So whether you're making a yogurt or making a chocolate bar, we had Nobo in recently and they have an issue there. Trying to get people to adopt or try your product in store. You are a small company.
Mm-hmm.
How do you spread yourself widely and go into these stores and try to convince 10 or 20 or 40 or 60 women or whatever to try your product? You don't have the resources, do you?
Well, we don't. And pre-COVID, I've done in stores. I mean, I've gone in, I've stood there. I've no problem stopping people as they walk past me to try the product because I know as soon as they touch it, feel it, smell it, they'll love it. What makes skin formulas different to a lot of cosmeceutical brands on the market? Cosmeceuticals normally look at just results, and that's amazing. I am a qualified aromatherapist as well. And my personal thing with products is that the experience needs to be amazing also. So when you pick up a product, you smell it, you touch it, you want to love what it does, but you also want to enjoy the experience. So we have incorporated results-driven ingredients, but with that beautiful, luxurious experience and that beautiful smell that the product can offer as well. So when we are doing in stores, immediately we knew that people were going to stop, smell, touch and love. So we have testers in all of our stores. We have sample sachets that we can provide to people for them to open and try. And as soon as people do try the product, touch it immediately, they love it. And that's kind of where we get to hook them in.
I feel for you, small business trying to get really big. It's tough.
And there's, you know, a lot involved in getting there.
When you have a great product, I mean, we've seen it with other products and you're also coming from great experience. So you know what you're talking about, which is great. I mean, that'll make the difference. And also people are more concerned about their health.
Yes.
So, is that your specific market that you're going after, is people who want to look better, feel better?
Exactly. I suppose our target customer will be people who are interested in investing in themselves. You know, they like a premium product. They like to look after themselves. They're happy to invest in their skin and they want to see those results. Yeah.
And where are you developing this product then from? What else is there kind of when we were talking about before the show about where you were going in the future and you were saying there's so many different areas to go to.
Yes, absolutely. So I suppose for me, initially, it's the skin and it's, you know, looking at what we put on our skin and how it affects the skin. There's so many other elements that people can use, the wrong type of makeup, for example, the wrong type of fake tans on their skin. They can use cheap devices that you can buy online now, which will also damage the skin. So for us as a brand, we're looking at developing out into all these other areas. So skincare is the first element, but there's so many add-on things that people are using on their skin that can go against their results from their skincare if they're not using the correct add-on, so to speak.
Serious question. Anything for men?
Everything. Unisex.
So it doesn't matter? Yeah.
No, absolutely not. It's about the skin type and the skin concern, not the gender.
And if I wanted to find out what my skin type was, how do I find that out?
So any of our salons or clinics who stock the product would do consultations for you, and then they would recommend, you know, a tailored program for your skin. Also, if you go onto our website, we've quite clearly marked on the website under each product what an indication would be. So, you know, you might have an idea if your skin was dry or oily, but you might not know if you're sensitized or if you have congestion or if you have, you know, a different concern. So we've very clearly described what those indications are for people so that they can then find a product to match that particular indication.
Wasn't the kind of thing the Christian Brothers taught me.
I'm sure not.
The good news, Connell, is you can use the product. That's good news.
Which I now just learned, yeah. Exactly. Absolutely. Because I was thinking, geez, you know, that's half of the world that you're missing out on. But obviously you're not.
No, absolutely. Unisex. Yeah.
And speaking of the rest of the world, getting off the island, that is one of your ambitions, which I love hearing always.
Yes.
What's next?
So the distribution partnership that we have at the moment with our fulfillment, they're hoping to move into the UK themselves in January. So that will fall in line with our plans to hit the UK in January. And I do have a team on the ground in the UK. So that should help to make it kind of a nice, easy transition for us. We do hope to obviously hit the US market, looking at what other brands have done through QVC. Some people who I really admire within the industry have gone down that route.
Be careful with QVC, because I've learned something, I think, on the podcast,
okay,
is that you go into QVC, let us say that somebody, or the people absolutely mm-hmm. adore you. Well, you have to suddenly produce 1 million packets
absolutely.
Of,
and that's
or else they hate you. And then
about.
If you don't supply it, and then you might say, oh, I'm going to produce 1 million units, and then nobody buys it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a nightmare.
It's when we're at a growth stage, for sure. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But it would be, I suppose, kind of a way of breaking ground, you know, quite quickly and easily. And then obviously, we would love to hit towards Australia. I lived in Australia for a couple of years. I have a very good relationship with the lady I used to work for. She has a couple of physical salons, but she also has a distribution herself. She distributes her own brand of spray tan. So she has spoke to me quite in depth about the possibility of us moving some product out there as well, which would be amazing. And maybe another trip to Australia down the line. So,
which you can also charge to the company. Remember that part, yeah. Isn't that? That's very important. To
very important.
And I presume if you're going to go for growth, which you are, that means money.
Yes.
Are you going to raise money?
At the moment, we're not looking for investment. Everything has been self-funded. We've really grown the business, you know, just by being kind of careful with where we're putting our spend. We have slowly increased our quantities, which has increased our margins. So, you know, I'd like to keep it self-funded for now, if possible. Down the line, I'm not saying I wouldn't say no to investment, but it would have to be with the right people who are very similar focused to myself. You know, this has been a dream of mine to create this brand, and, you know, I've gotten it this far, and I'd hate to see it taken in a direction that maybe I wasn't comfortable with.
Well, I mean, you have a fabulous brand, so that's the first step anyway. And you've got through the hard part, which is the whole creating the product. So now it's really how are you going to grow it, and whether there's going to be self-funding or somebody else that comes in. Mm. Like, you'd obviously want a partner that's already in the business as opposed to just taking funds in. Is that your kind of idea?
Yes, I'd like to have somebody who has a similar vision for the brand. Absolutely.
And then ultimately, do you want one of the very, very big guys to buy you out, or are you after, dare I say, world domination yourself?
I definitely see myself with Skin Formulas for the next 20 years. I see myself growing this brand. Like, I literally have put every inch of my soul into it. I've had two babies since the product has launched. So, you know, I've given it everything. And now I'm in a position where I can really focus on driving it more so. So I definitely don't see myself going anywhere, anytime fast.
What part do you really find exciting? For those of you listening, Geraldine looks fantastic. She's obviously
she looks
about
20.
10. I I was going to say younger again. I have to say she looks amazing.
Thank you.
And you have this incredible energy about you as well. So, you know, it's absolutely very exciting what you're doing. Really, really great.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
How and ever, there's a question that this is a be a boy question. You are very kind of kind and only called the company Skin Formulas. Were you not tempted to call it Jones Formula? Or is there anything to put your name into?
No, absolutely not.
Why not? Why not?
It was actually probably one of the things when I first started, I was absolutely certain on I didn't want it to be Geraldine Skincare or anything to do with me personally. From the long-term perspective of selling the brand, that was kind of, you know, something that I thought about quite clearly.
She's selling.
Long-term plan. But no, I wanted it to be, you know, I wanted it to be about the brand and the product. Obviously, my background plays a huge part in what makes the product successful and what it does. But I really wanted the product to stand alone and to be recognized worldwide for itself as a brand.
I think it works. It's so simple. It says what it says and it does what it says.
Exactly.
Absolutely. I mean, what part of it do you love the most? Because, you know, you've created the product. We can obviously see you can sell as well. Like, what part of the whole business do you enjoy the most?
I love, and I still to this day get a kick out of somebody walking in to the clinic and asking to buy the Skin Formula serum or the eye cream or the moisturizer and hearing that there's a want for my brand that I have worked so hard to create. It's that joy that you feel knowing that someone said, oh, I've used the moisturizer. I love it. I can't wait to try the eye cream or the night cream. And it's seeing people getting the results, enjoying the products, loving the products as much as I do. That's what really gives me the best kick.
It's good.
Fantastic.
Geraldine, I hope you read your email, because one of the things we always ask is the hire in a heartbeat. Some people have forgotten to read the email, you know.
Yes.
That upset
me. I did read it. I did read the email.
Good. So who would you hire in a heartbeat?
So I'm going to be a little bit sneaky. I have two.
That's all right. That's
I'm breaking the rules a little bit.
No, that's okay. That is allowed, actually.
Yeah, my first would be, and I know you spoke to her, Amy Connolly.
Yeah.
Sculpted by Amy. I think she's incredible for what she's done at such a young age. The drive and the determination. Like I see a lot of myself in her as well. When she talks about her product, you can really see how passionate she is. I definitely feel that. Nobody probably does work as hard as she does, given, you know, what she's done so far. But I think she'd be a fantastic addition to any brand, you know, her drive and determination alone. So Amy would be my brand or industry specific hire in a heartbeat. And then the second would be my uncle Peter, who we did actually speak about earlier. Peter Byrne, CEO of FRS.
Who has been on the show. And if you haven't heard him, he is incredible and well worth going back on to. I can't remember the episode number, but he was brilliant.
He's brilliant. And he's been a sounding board for all of our families, you know, for years, but also just from a business point of view, for me, he's been incredible support. And, you know, like that down the line, if I have a board, have somebody who's there to kind of steer and direct us in the right direction, he'd be amazing.
And tell the truth, who told me about you?
Peter.
Correct. He said, he was sitting here, he says, you've got to meet Geraldine.
Oh.
There you go. So he's forever selling, and obviously in the good way, getting you in here was fantastic. So again, thanks very much, Geraldine Jones of Skin Formulas. People who are listening can buy your product in, say it again, Mars, Shaw's, Dunn's.
We have a wide range of salons and stockists spread all around Ireland. So you'll find all of our professional stockists on our website as well, skinformulas.ie. And it'd be great to support the local salons and clinics as well.
And to support a member of Team GBS. That's you.
Yeah, thank you.
Geraldine Jones, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
It's all go at Chrissy Gno on thatgreatbusinessshow.com.
De Facto backs your businesses through this podcast. So please back them by buying the world's best shaving oil, defactoshave.com. And as creator Tom Murphy keeps reminding people, it's a shaving oil, not a beard oil. So it is for everyone that shaves. And that's why he says it's the best anyone can get.
That Great Business Show.
Now, if you listen back to the retailing masterclass given to us on episode 46 of That Great Business Show by the Queen of Primark, Bridge O'Donoghue, you will be left in no doubt that always, always, always the customer should be the focus. So if you're in bricks and mortar retailing, how do you know what a customer really wants? Unless you follow them around very oddly in the store to see what they're most interested in. That is, unless you use a brand new software called Glimpse, developed by Oren Mulvey and Shane O'Sullivan. The two former school pals say that their software gives large and small shopkeepers much greater intelligence about the makeup, habits and patterns of their customers. What the two have done is to create a small sensor placed inside the shop door that gives bricks and mortar retailers the same level of shopper data as Google Analytics gives to e-commerce. And they swear it's all GDPR compliant. The company is currently funding, looking for €2 million to bring them into the UK and beyond. Meanwhile, Oran Mulvey, Shane O'Sullivan are both here. Welcome to That Great Business Show to you both.
Thanks very much for having us, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Let's start with the obvious question. You're snooping on people. That's
yes.
a question.
Yes, it's normally where I suppose this conversation starts. So just, you gave us quite the delicate intro there. But basically, yeah, we've created a sensor that combines hardware and software. We install it either above a retail entrance or on top of aisles or key areas in store. And it basically uses anonymous information. So footfall, estimated age and gender, dwell, product engagement. We can also look at things like loyalty and shop duration and feed that back.
And let me stop you right there, because if you can guess my age and gender, you can see who I am or what I am. So therefore, it's no more GDPR compliant. Not that I care, because I give all my information to Microsoft and everybody else anyway. So actually, you can't honestly be GDPR compliant.
No, it is. It's actually much more compliant than what you're used to.
Shane speaking now.
Sorry, Shane here. Much more compliant than cookies, click rates, and the usual stuff that you get. Even your loyalty card in your local store. We don't actually store any personally identifiable information whatsoever. We don't store your image. We don't store your video. We don't know it's you, even by repeat exposure. All we're doing is analyzing a live video stream and guessing age and gender of people who come in. We can guess it to a really high accuracy because we've trained these machine learning models in retail environments. So we're getting very accurate at doing it. But it's just the same as someone standing at the door with a clip pad and saying, the person came in, guesses his age and gender, and at the end of the day, they hand me that clip pad. 1,000 people came in, 500 were men, 500 women. This is the rough age group, and this is how long they spent in store. It's all completely anonymized crowd metrics, nothing to do with the individual.
Would you not have issues to do with privacy? You know, I mean, do you have to tell people that when you come into the store, we're going to be observing you and your habits?
We make sure our customers get that across to their customer base. So we always, that's the best practice, and which we do. So we're not observing anybody. It's all, like I said, it's completely anonymized and nothing is ever stored about you. So you could be 500 random people going through the store or analyzing what product you're engaging with. But at the end of the day, the information that gets delivered to these retailers is completely anonymized.
And really, that's the retailers don't really want to know, you know, it's Shane O'Sullivan coming back into my shop every single Tuesday, 52 weeks out of the year.
They might that be if they're trying to get their bills paid.
They might be, yeah, if something keeps going missing. But they, they want to know, you know, how many people came in? Where are they interacting? Are those products actually being bought? When, you know, we offer a fifth cup of coffee free a month, is that increasing loyalty or is it not? You know, is the basket spend that has a coffee involved increasing or decreasing? So really, we're kind of the data science behind a lot of the formerly intuitive-based decisions that these retailers were making.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot more responsible way to collect data too. When you compare it to loyalty card schemes with your cookies, I'm sure you're well aware of that stuff. The way Glimpse collects data is completely anonymized. But we have to make sure it was anonymized, but also useful for these retailers. And we've found the sweet spot. We've done it.
The obvious question then is to tell me how good it is, because you have some big brand name customers yourselves. What have you proven to them or shown to them?
Well, I think as well, to get started, there was a lot of mistakes were made at the start. So a lot of companies, the question we always get asked is, we're two young guys, we're raising money a lot. How come two guys from Ireland have figured it out when there's a lot of bigger companies in America who haven't?
I'm sure Zuckerberg and all the rest, they were kids as well. If you don't want to be called a kid. But
Well,
call me Zuckerberg all you want.
But essentially, when we got kicked off, I mean, we tried in a lot of different ways, essentially. So at the beginning, we, you know, tried to take still images, just capture demographics and then delete the still images. But, you know, if someone basically tied their shoes in front of one of our sensors, they were 400 people that minute. And there was a lot of mistakes along the way, a lot of real world lab tests, a lot of money has gone into it, a lot of time. And
we're delivering a lot to these retailers.
But tell me what?
When it comes to, imagine building a website, you sell shoes online. For ages, you were selling shoes online and you were making profit from the website and it's been absolutely great. And what if we introduce Google Analytics to that website? Yes, you were making money, but you don't know where you're making money from. You have no idea how people are behaving on the website, who they are, what piques their interest. What's just as important to these retailers is not what's being sold. It's what are people engaging with? What are people getting up to that point of purchase and deciding against doing? Glimpse helps them make that decision. Glimpse pushes people over, you know, that point of purchase. It analyzes what your shoppers are interested in and you feed into that.
I have to ask, what was the weird thing that you found out about some purchasing process of people that you kind of say, oh my God, that's really weird?
Oh yeah, we do mad stuff. We analyze like the last thing we checked. We analyze till systems as well. And everything is completely confidential, but we're able to run screens and say, okay, who's coming in and buying boxes of Amberleaf, for instance, cigarettes? And you analyze, okay, who came in and made these purchases? Just the rough age and gender, it gives me a best guess percentage of who bought them, but what was the accompanying purchase? And a lot of the times it's you find people buy weird items together.
Four pints of milk and three packs of cigarettes. I mean, what's that guy doing on a Friday? You know, where is he going after he comes to this shop?
Yeah.
And as well, some of what we used to do as well before we got into retail was measure screens. So if you see a digital screen on the roadside, we were trying to provide the same metrics that you would get, you know, if you put an ad online. And we would measure screen engagement time. So once again, you can't tell who the person is, but we can tell somebody was looking directly at the screen for 3 seconds on average. And then sometimes you would see a 2-minute engagement. Like somebody was walking through Joe Dundrum Town Centre, stopped right in front of the screen and did not break eye contact. Like something was really going on that resonated with them.
You're the experts. Tell me what that's about.
We don't give our opinion. We just share the data.
We take a hands-reach approach because we do make recommendations. We're really good at identifying areas that need interest. Yes, these 5 stores are overperforming. Let's dive into that. But you have to make the decision on why. You have to find out what works and bring that across the rest of your brand.
And a lot of the time as well, you know, they'll kind of say, okay, we're trying to increase the amount of young people who come in. So, Joe, we're running a promotion, you know, at lunchtime, that's, Joe, a coffee with a sandwich at £3 rather than £4.50 like it is. And we can tell them whether more young people are coming in or not and whether purchases are increasing or decreasing because of it. If it works, that's great. Use it at scale. If it doesn't work, drop it and move on, which sometimes can be, you know, the awkward thing when you're being told that by, you know, 2 26-year-olds.
Well, going back to the 2 26-year-olds,
sure.
Really impressive what you've done. Is your IP in the sensors and the analytics together? Did you create the sensors yourselves? Yeah.
That's a good question, Susan. Thanks. It's actually, so the sensors are kind of off the shelf. So we're putting together unique hardware together, kind of off the shelf. What our real IP is how we process data, how we make it functionality. The technology to actually do this in a retail environment in real time has not existed by the last 2 years. We were lucky enough to get our hands on the chips that you need to do the really intricate video analytics. We have to do it what's called on the edge. It has to happen on the device. You cannot send anything away from that. For you to do this years ago, people were taking snap images and counting how many people were in it. It wasn't accurate, and accuracy has to be the foundation for these kind of retailers to make decisions. So what we did is we implemented these brand new technology. We built our code. We built these machine learning libraries, and we make it run really accurately on the edge. So it means that with minimal power requirements, with minimal internet, with minimal commitment from the retailer, we can make it run properly in the stores.
So where is that technology going? You have it in store at the moment. So where is the kind of next step in terms of that technology?
So having a device in the store is really good in a lot of cases because we're in control of a lot of the inputs. We know the image quality. We know how quickly they can run. We know how much power they take. So we think we're always going to have these devices in store. Right now, for us to get a retail store online, it takes about 15 to 30 minutes for our engineer to go out and do it. We want the retailers to do that themselves. We want to get to a stage where they can buy it online. It's just, right now, it's as simple as charging your phone at night. You just have to plug it in and point it in the right direction. We want to make it even simpler for the retailers to do because time is the most important thing for these guys.
Yeah, and a big USB for us, that's kind of, I suppose, it's almost like a soft advantage in terms of, you know, falling on investors' ears, but it's massive for the retailer, is that it requires no input. Whether you're dealing with someone, whether you're dealing with like a Tesco or if you're dealing with a mom and pop store, both of them have no time. And none of them want to be installing apps or installing software or figuring out how it's going to link with the EPOS. They're literally like, Joe, you guys do it all and just show us the data at the end of the day. And that, I suppose, was the difficulty in the learning curve to get it there.
Yeah.
And another thing I'll say as well for the USB, we touched on privacy at the beginning. And I suppose the biggest difficulty getting this to the stage that it was the privacy aspect. How do you do this reliably? Because, I mean, the retailers can say, I definitely didn't have 400 people in today because the manager has been working here for 40 years. Is in there. And separately, like obviously gathering reliable demographic information and doing that in a privacy conscious manner while also being audited by the proper authorities. And a lot of the companies in the US, Joe, that we'll probably be going up against, hopefully in the next couple of years, a lot of them are using facial recognition. You know, they're saving Shane's face, and they're looking for Shane again in store to know he's moved from A to B. I won't give away our secret sauce, but we've found a very reliable way to do it in a privacy conscious way. And those privacy laws are now being swept across the US. So
we're ahead of the curve.
You guys are unbelievable. Honestly, I'm 26.
I know. Scary.
What did you do when you were 26?
I can't repeat what I did at 26.
No, no, fairness.
It was legal, though. I was
in the software industry then. And, you know, I have to say, when I was 26, there's nothing like this technology. It just wrapped. And that's why it's, you know, what you're involved in today, you obviously have to get investment, to keep going, to keep moving, pushing the boat out in terms of the technology and what you bring to the customer.
That's it.
And like Joe, you know, we touched on at the start, obviously this technology is fantastic, but we do have a great team behind us. I mean, you know, it's not, I don't know anything about any technology. What I always describe is I'm like a plumber who knows his own pipes. So our company couldn't tell you anything else about any technology outside of that, because obviously I just need to know how ours works to sell it.
Yeah, Oren does bring us down to earth a lot of times. The guys can be fixing a problem that doesn't exist for a retailer, or they could be coming up with a solution that's too complicated to actually push out to market. Oren does bring us down to earth and said, listen lads, that's a waste of time, which is
good.
It's the most important
good
thing
insight.
To have. Yeah,
good insight,
you'd be surprised by how much time we waste.
Now you are funding.
Yeah.
How much? I mentioned 2 million. I bet you need far more than that because you have big ambitions.
We're going to be doing a few rounds of funding, I think.
Just because we're on radio, kind of.
Yeah.
I just saw a big smile on Oren's face when I said more than 2 million. I think I'm onto something.
Oh, well, of course, if you say more than 2 million to me at any time of the day, I'll have a big smile on my face. I think, you know, we talked about Shane and I. Obviously, Shane was kind of the techie when we started. And now we're both kind of sales, operations, marketing, financing, whatever other hats we need to wear.
Yeah.
But a big part of it is raising funds. That's kind of half the job, half the year round. And whether we're dealing with individual angels who are obviously, you know, a lot of them come from a retail background or entrepreneurial or tech, so they have a huge interest, or sometimes it's syndicates, which is obviously a group made up of angels, or now we're kind of at the VC stage where for the first time through our funding rounds, we're dealing with VCs. We're looking at 1.5 to 2. And that is specifically so we can grow the company here, grow the team on the sales side, and then obviously to grow the tech team as the live unit count increases. And then we'd like to go over to the UK as well.
Yeah.
So I'm going to make a smile now even more because I every day get the VC newsletters in out of pure interest. Do you know where the seed rounds are now? 20 million is now deemed to be a seed round. For those who don't know what I'm talking about, back in the day when you're having a seed round, it could have been 100,000 quid, but now they're up at 20 million. So, you know, go
doesn't,
for growth.
Come doesn't on. Surprise me now. That definitely, I'd say the stats that you're pulling now are from somewhere like LA or San Fran or maybe London. Some of them are that high. But when you try to VC funding in Ireland in general, it's a little bit, they're a little bit more conservative. Irish people in general invest in property.
For a second, I thought you were going to say something else. I'm going to say, don't say that. No. Don't say that. Show them the love.
No, they're really good at their jobs. Don't get me wrong. But historically, they are a bit more conservative, as Irish people are. We tend to put money into property. We don't have this big investment culture like they have in the US. It'd be absolutely brilliant. We felt like if we were working over there, we'd be doing loads of things. But
and that's my question. Yeah. Why aren't you looking at VCs in the UK or even in the US? You know, how far away are you from
Ireland,
outside of Ireland?
In terms of like a retailer market, in terms of VC market, and even a technology and privacy market, Ireland's one of the toughest countries in the world to make it work. So we're focusing here. If we can make it work here, we will make it work in the US. We will make it work in the UK. We're getting the story right. So when we hit the market over there, we hit the ground running.
I think as well, COVID's been a very interesting time. I'll paint you a picture here. So obviously we are a retail, our target customers are retail and using facial detection analysis, look at people's faces. Well, retailers started closing their doors and everyone started putting masks on. And we were also funding at the same time. So it was a very, very,
very difficult
couple sleepless nights in there. I'm not going to lie to you, Susan. But I think, you know, the funding has been a very interesting thing during COVID. Because in one way, it's been very difficult not to go into a room with someone and shake their hand, especially if you're asking for a certain sum of money. But another side of it, it's also made things a bit faster. You know, you're not waiting for 4 weeks at a time for you to answer two questions, then, you know, book another meeting for 4 weeks away. But I think we wanted to look for international investment as well. We still are, too. We're still engaging with some VCs as well. But I think that part, you know, has slowed it down because we can't fly over, meet them, introduce them to the team,
but you're
let
doing,
them hold
you're doing
the technology.
Right.
November, you can.
Yeah,
you can.
Exactly.
Yeah, I can't wait.
But guys, you're right. I mean, if you can't sell to you know, somebody down the road. What are you doing trying to sell to somebody in another country? Mm-hmm. You're exactly. actually getting it right. Using Ireland as the test bed, you know, it's the right way to do it. I mean, yeah. well done for having a practical approach
yeah.
to it.
Yeah.
And I think as well, a lot of the customers that we deal with in Ireland, we do target the larger chain brick and mortar retailers. But obviously, you know, especially when you're investing, you'll take every sale you can get. But it's been interesting because a lot of our customers have a mixture where they've either never had any forms of data. So, you know, you're going to someone who's never even had footfall before and you're, you know, trying to explain to them facial detection analysis and mobile phone analysis and all of that. And then some of them have been very, you know, tech focused for a decade. So it's been a very interesting testing ground. And we kind of find if at the moment we've been lucky, we've managed to listen to everybody's concerns and everybody to find value in it. So I think it will do us justice when we kind of go across
a
the water.
A retailer agnostic solution is what we've come up with.
I have three questions. One, how much would it cost a mom and pop store to install this?
So it's from €700 annually per store.
And okay,
that's doable. Very good. Yeah.
And
yeah.
also, we don't charge for the hardware. We don't charge for support. We don't charge for consultation. Essentially, you put a device in there tomorrow. We charge about, you know, €100 to get it installed. And about €70 a month or €80 a month to keep it running.
Yeah.
So you're doing it as a SaaS or a...
It is.
Yeah, okay.
It's IoT as a solution, yeah.
Second question is, you're trying to raise money. Who are you looking for? We've mentioned the VCs and all. If anybody in listening to, who are Team GBS, who are listening to this, are you willing to talk to smaller investors who just love what they're hearing?
Yeah, we definitely are. We might have a bit of room left in this round. We're getting a lot of attention now, which is absolutely great. But we're definitely up for having any conversation.
Do you like that little bit of room left? He's ever the politician. So our last round was made up of Enterprise Ireland, High Potential Startup, and then Angels. So we definitely do have love for Angels. And I think that the two groups that we currently have a mixture of and want to keep a mixture of is kind of retail entrepreneurs or retail-focused individuals and technology.
Did I see the pointy investor was involved with you, correct? Yeah,
Charles, yeah. We've been dealing with Charles actually for a number of years. It was definitely an Irish thing, a friend of a friend of a friend.
Yeah.
And when we first got kicked off...
That's how the world works, yeah.
That was it, exactly.
Nepotism is king. Every time that we make a sale, it's because somebody's cousin's dog was involved, you know?
Yeah, that's the way it works.
Yeah, Charles has been... Even before we were retail-focused, Charles we would go to for advice. And then eventually the company just by chance went from, you know, I don't know, consensus to media and then eventually to retail, and Charles got involved, which is great.
So what's your big ambition, guys? Where are you going to take the business? Are we going to be reading about you, you know, in the next number of years and you're right up there at the top?
We do want to take over the world, don't get us wrong. We want to be a big company. We think we've got a really amazing product and team, so we know we can do it. But we want to focus on building the business rather than just going for the sale. We want to focus on building a really successful business. And the people who've invested already and are going to invest, in the future, they're going to be bought out at a really good price. And we're going to keep growing that way.
Yeah, and I think the goal for us really is the US. I mean, right now, we've a very small team. We'd like to remain a small team relatively to how much money we're making. But like, really, if anything is retail analytics focused, it belongs in the US. It's the largest market. It has the most amount of competitors. It has the most amount of problems. But really, that's where the company belongs. So Ireland... Incorporate the UK, maybe a bit of Europe, and then straight to the US the minute that we can, Joe, raise a war chest.
And if it all goes wrong, can I suggest that both of you get involved in talk radio? You're bloody brilliant.
Thank you very much.
Everybody tells us that we never stop talking, so I'm taking
I love
compliment.
That, though. It makes my life easy. Final question. Hire in a heartbeat. Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
I don't know. I'm just thinking on the spot here. We're going to the web summit.
I sent you an email the other day. You shouldn't have been thinking on the spot.
No, Oren only tells me things last minute, by the way. But I think we should hire Werner Vogels. I think it'd be a great one.
Who?
Werner Vogels. He's the CTO of Amazon. I think he's now the vice president. We're actually
I should have known that.
We're going to the web summit next week in the first week in November in Lisbon. And hopefully he's going to be one of the presenters.
And we've requested to meet him for an hour. And I don't know what his salary is like in Amazon, but I bet you we can match it.
That sounds good.
Well, think
Werner,
big.
Make him an offer.
If you're listening, the boys need to talk to you. And the two boys are, and I do mean boys, Oren Mulvey and Shane O'Sullivan. Thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
ISME is the independent SME association, looking after the interests of all types of businesses across Ireland. ISME membership includes invaluable HR and general advice, training, promotional tools, members' discounts, events, and networking with fellow SMEs. ISME membership starts from €195 with easy pay options. ISME. Join today at isme.ie or email membership@isme.ie.
Carroll Estates is a family-owned firm founded in 1974 by Bernard Carroll, and that's now recognised as a name in the Irish residential housing market. They're mad keen to tell the world that they're selling an estate of 80 new healthy homes at Brookfield in Malahide. That's in North Dublin. Then again, given the frantic nature of the housing market, they probably need very little publicity to shift their houses. However, we love a good backstory on That Great Business Show. So when Roisin Carroll, family member, as well as sales and marketing manager at the family firm, told us that she had previously joined the firm and left after 6 months, only to rejoin some years later, we had to know more about how she, her dad Bernard, her sister, and her husband, that is the sister's husband, who are all on the team, make it all work. This lot could also be known as family businesses and how to survive them. Roisin Carroll, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you very much for having me on.
6 months is all you lasted with the da.
Well, in fairness, I was only allowed 6 months. That was all he decided to take me on for and give me a trial. So,
Fail the trial?
I'd like to think we amicably moved on from each other, but no, it's the family business. It was something I've always kind of dipped in and out of. And after I left my background in marketing and was searching for another challenge, shall we say, he offered me very kindly 6 months there and I did those. And then we both agreed I should probably have another look around.
Susan Spence, if you were interviewing Roisin for a job, do you like what you're hearing so far? Does it sound a little bit dodgy to you?
Absolutely not. You're terrible, Conal. You're absolutely dreadful. I mean, the backbone of Irish SMEs is family businesses. You know that. And we want the next generation, etc. So I'm very disappointed in your dad that after 6 months, you must have construction in your bones, do you?
I'd like to think so, yes. He's very, very passionate about this. He's an entrepreneur. He set it all up himself. One-man show. And I just admire the man greatly, as does nearly everybody who meets him. So when you're presented with that, plus being his daughter, taking orders, it was challenging, yes. So what I did was I left and set up my own company and operated Roshka Developments for 15 years until... And please don't ask me how I ended up back in the company because I can't answer that question. But here I am, back, sales and marketing manager.
But do tell me, because you did tell me before, and I love the backstory on this one, is to what Roshka was doing and why, well, why you changed your mind about it.
Yes, I originally had grand designs on buying and doing up old properties because I have a passion about saving. I don't just want to start anew the whole time. We've got some beautiful buildings that are derelict in this country, especially in Dublin, where I live. And I had this fabulous idea after watching a certain program
called Grand Designs.
And set up the company with all these ideas and had bank funding and all this kind of thing. And then went out to try and buy one, as did every other Dubliner on the planet. Like, just impossible. Kept getting outbid. Just everybody was obviously watching the same show as I was. So, yes. Set up and ended up then buying developed sites and building those. I did planning on one site and decided, no, I was better off at the other end of the spectrum. And did that for the 15 years, as I said, somehow ended up back with Carroll Estates, but it's no longer a one-man show.
Were you out on site hawking around the concrete and the blocks? No.
Yeah, they wouldn't let me operate the machines either. I don't know why that was, but... I did everything from the signing off on the design of the houses, working with my architects, getting bank funding, as I said, right up to actually our first show house. I did the show house myself. Fortunately, somebody bought it. That was very,
very useful.
Good to know that that could happen.
One of the good things, as Susan mentioned there, is that so many Irish SMEs are family-owned, family-run. Mm. And there is this problem about working with the family. Talk me through how you guys survive.
There's challenges in that. Siblings in particular have a certain shorthand, shall we say. But in Carroll Estates, there's not only myself and my sister, who is the design manager. She's been working with my father longer. And my brother-in-law joined us in 2020. So my sister is not only working with her sister, she's working with her husband and her father. And would you believe that we have an aunt as well who has worked with my father since the beginning as well. So there's five of us all having very strong opinions on most things to do with Carroll Estates.
One of the benefits of having your brother-in-law, isn't he, working with you, is he is a business coach.
Not quite a business coach, but very much into that way of thinking. He's a business coach mind, I'd like to say. He's a marketing background as well. And so when Daniel joined, he shadowed us all. He just has a huge interest and a huge capacity for learning. And when he joined us all, when my father finally decided he might retire. Now, when I say retire, the man is now working 4 days a week only. So only about 40 hours instead of the usual 7 days a week, 120 hours. So he's still very much part of the business. But the day-to-day, he very amazingly and generously handed over to us, the three of us, plus our team of, there's five of us on the whole management team as well. So he did actually step back in January 2020. And my brother-in-law, Daniel, is now the MD of the company. And yes, we are following every order he gives us.
And is that easier because it's not your sibling? You know, you're not actually answering to them, or is it all the Japanese way where it's kind of all sort of collaborative and you all make the decisions? Or how do you manage when a tough decision has to be made?
We're still growing on that. But yes, I think we respect each other and we know that we have the same interests at heart. Like, we have a legacy here that's been handed down to us, and it's a strong, Carroll Estates has a really strong, I suppose, image out there as a strong brand. And so there's a bit of responsibility there, but we're all completely behind it and enthusiastic about it. And as I said, it's taking five of us to take over from one man. So we've got the support there. We've all got our strengths. And Daniel in particular, as I said, is very good with the coaching. So there's a good bit of retraining with us all and learning how to work together and then be able to go home and have, you know, a meal on a Saturday night and want to see the other people of the family.
So do you have the ban in the family, which is we don't talk business after 6 p.m. Do you have that?
I do.
You do? Yeah, I know.
Other people have other way of working. But it's working. It's working really well.
I think that's
a no. It's a great idea, but in practice, when it's your own business, you know, I have my kids saying to me, "I don't believe you're still working." You know, at maybe 8 p.m. in the evening, and I'm going, "When you own your own business, you work when it, you know, when you have to." So,
yes, and we've got a good team behind us, as I keep saying, but they're just phenomenal. The passion our employees have.
How big is the company now?
There is about 20 full time. So we're not a large company. We're
but you're
operational.
Perfectly formed, as they say.
Exactly, that's it.
And if you are now five, where your dad was one, does that mean that you've got bigger ambitions? Because I'm going to get onto the housing market now. I have so many curiosities about what's really going on, not the headline stuff. But if there are now five where there was one, does that mean that you're going to go big?
We're not sure yet. We're quite happy the way we are. And it's, again, it's quite difficult to get sites in Ireland and planning restrictions and everything like that. What you might want to build, you can't necessarily do so. And also there is a lot of other people with deeper pockets than us. So, but we've been very lucky. We're currently operating in two areas, one in Meath and one in Dublin at the moment. Brookfield, which I'm on to talk about the healthy house there, is our Malahide one.
That was good, wasn't it?
Thank you very much. Did you like that?
I don't think we were going to ask you about that.
And we have another site that we're currently trying to get developing on. So possibly next year we might be up to three teams. I would hope the latest be the year after, but I'm touching wood while saying that.
Well, listen, you're very kind to come into us. So let's talk about your healthy home and, more importantly, about the wider housing market. Because one of the things, I think, was it in the Sunday Business Post out the last week or the week before, there was a developer talking about margins, the real bit of business. Margins are not enormous, sure they're not.
They're not normal?
Not enormous.
No. I know the price of houses in this country, you would expect them to be. But no, everything, like the labour, land, the VAT on top of the little government the little government things that you've got to do to get the house up and running, the amount of money you put into a site just before you even put a brick on the ground. I don't have I wouldn't be the figures person. It's astounding. I know everybody thinks that We're, you know, laughing all the way to the bank, but we're not. And having been through a recession myself where you were selling houses that you were lucky, if you broke even, you were going out to celebrate that night. How we didn't manage to lose one employee during all that, again, you know, I don't know how that happened. But yeah, it's tough out there at the moment.
It's tough, yeah, except that there is a massive demand for houses.
Mm-hmm.
And so why, I'm going to get onto the healthy house now.
Thank you.
Why would you bother to, because this healthy home thing sounds like a marketing ploy. Why do you bother? I mean, they're going to sell themselves anyway, aren't they?
We're not in it for this development. Carol Estates has been around for a long time and we plan to be around for a long time. So our houses are going to be something that people go, oh, yes, the Brookfield development. Oh, yes, that was Carol Estates, wasn't it? Oh, there was really good feedback about that. So it's something we do with every estate. We sit down and we go, okay, we talk to our sales agents. What do people want? Bernie brought in, I think, the first en-suites in North Dublin, because it was something that he saw in a development in South Dublin. He went...
Bernie being your dad.
Apologies, yes, Bernie being dad. So it's something that we do at every juncture. It's not just for this estate, but obviously COVID was a bit of a unique scenario. So we sat down and we thought, what do people want? And the first thing was working from home. So we are actually offering attic conversions if people want that and they can have that extra space for working from home. But then we came up with and just said, do you know what? I'd love to be able to invite the neighbour around for a cup of tea or something like that. But it doesn't feel right in this climate. And we kind of started thinking then, well, you know, maybe if they just came in and they didn't have to be touching things so much, you know, you could feel that bit safer in your own home. So our Healthy House initiative was born from that. And as well as being wired, we focus on the ground floor, kind of the public area. And we have wired for sound, for it's very electronic kind of house. But the big thing we're excited about.
You can tell the lights to go on by shouting at them, isn't that right?
Exactly. So if your neighbour walks into your house and it's dark, they're not fumbling around walls. They just go lights on. And they know because they're your neighbour and they've bought another house from us. And the big thing was, and our bathroom suppliers tell us that we're the first residential development to ever do this, is when you walk into the downstairs bathroom in a Carol Estates Brookfield house, it's a sensor toilet, sensor light, sensor tap. So it really is. You can feel safer in our homes. Well, we hope people will. We hope our residents will.
Roisin, I was one of the lucky people who went down to Japan for the Rugby World Cup. So I experienced the toilets
yes.
down there. And once I worked out how to use it, it was fantastic. So you obviously haven't got as far as that. But you know, is that where we go next?
Hang on, do explain more.
No.
I was actually at the World Cup as well. So, yes.
You saw that there. It was fantastic.
Have not experienced anything until you've experienced a Japanese toilet.
The only thing I will tell you is the heated seats, Conal. Very good. I liked that.
And music, they sing to you.
Yep.
I know, okay. We're very primitive here.
But Roisin, were you doing this from research, you know, that this is health conscious and people are going in that direction? Or, you know, was it just that you wanted an identity, a brand identity for that particular estate?
Not necessarily brand identity. It's back to what do people want? What will people want in homes? And, you know, we've already done a lot of eco-building before that. And obviously regulations then caught up with us. And, you know, all our houses come with solar panels and all that kind of thing. But this is different to that. This is a unique kind of COVID thing that you just want to feel a bit more safe. We're more educated than we ever were. We had to educate people about BER ratings at the beginning of all that and solar panels and why our houses had all these things and what they were. People now know about that. It's the same with germs and, you know, just, you know, say your partner's a sneezer into the hand instead of the elbow.
And then
they're turning off all the lights in the house and you're then trying to turn them back on again. And
I'm more thinking
germs.
Of the kids, the little kids, sticking our hands everywhere and poking their fingers into everything. Or that kid in the lift that hits every single button on you. So,
So I know it sounds gimmicky. It sounds, you know, will it take off? Who knows?
Is there a reaction to it? I mean, when people are coming in as you are selling them now, are they all going, wow?
Yes, well, we've only just got the Wi-Fi up and running, so it's taken a while. But yeah, people are very happy. The residents, we've just closed our first few houses in the last month.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Very exciting. So yeah, our residents, we're getting some actually really nice complimentary emails, and we just really appreciate them, because obviously there was delays, as there would be with every development during COVID. So yeah, it's exciting.
So you're her in a heartbeat. I'm wondering now, is this going to be, who would you think, Susan? Somebody techie kind of, Richard?
No. I want the person who invented the Japanese toilet, really. That's who I want.
If only I thought of that. It's actually Helena Morrissey, the financial, I don't want to say guru, but she's a financial expert, and she's also a great campaigner for equality. I heard her speak about 3 years ago, when you could still go out and hear people speak.
We're allowed to again in a few weeks.
I know, celebrations. But it's just one of those, you hear people speak all the time, you listen to the radio, you see things on TV. She just stuck with me. She was so passionate.
And what was it that she said, or whatever way she said it, that stuck with you or struck you?
Just the calmness, the logic, the
what was she
strength
saying to you?
Of, sorry, this was a speech, an overall speaker event I was at. So I can't remember the full context of the speech she said. Now, it was more her, I suppose, the groundedness, the knowledge. You could just see that. She also has 9 kids, so she's obviously a completely more than adequate at getting things done. Yeah. So yeah, if she wants to get in touch and give me a few hints, I would be absolutely delighted.
You're a flat cam. You don't need that kind of stuff.
I thank you. I know. I just when you asked the question, that was the person who came to mind.
Final question, because I always do this, is that the future of the housing market in Ireland, I mean, will we ever reach the magic number of 30,000 units or 40,000 units a year?
I think it'll be, personally, this is just my personal opinion, I think it's going to be quite tough. New regulations haven't stopped during COVID. They're still coming in. There's an infinite amount of land, and the government have given now that you have to have a certain amount of houses per, it's high density is what they want. Will people buy high density in certain areas? So yes, we can build you units. Will they be the right units is my question back.
That's a fair question or a fair observation. Roisin Carroll of Carroll Estates, thank you very much for joining us on That Great Business Show. You're now part of Team GBS, so we will hopefully have you back when all of your 80 units in Brookfield, Malahide, see the way I'm kind of making sure that everybody knows.
Thank you very much.
And they're very good value, you're going to tell me.
They are from, we're up to 770 is...
starting.
Up to now, that's where we are at the moment, yeah.
Okay, well, by the time the podcast goes out, it'll probably be a little bit higher.
Shoot up.
And that is it from That Great Business Show, episode 53. I, of course, have to thank my co-host, Susan Spence, for doing the heavy lifting for me today. And I hope, Susan, that you will come back more regularly. I could do with the help. Are you going to come back?
Never again. Never
yes,
again.
Yes, you will. Yes, you will. If we ever get any air conditioning into this place.
Well, I was
place.
Going to say, I mean, I think I've lost about 4 pounds in this room here. The heat.
Pounds? You still work on old pounds.
Oh, listen.
Kilograms.
I'm showing
kilo.
My age.
Also on today's team, we're from the Dublin Podcast Studios, Rob Curry, Hoosier Dwee's studio engineer par excellence. Later, his colleague, Peter Rice, will add a certain je ne sais quoi to proceedings before we post all on That Great Business Show podcast platforms. Team GBS wants to make more podcasts like the ones we make for the Love Irish Food Brands. So if you would like our team to deliver world-class podcasts for you, do please get in touch. We also want your ads. If you want to talk to Ireland's SME community, That Great Business Show is the way to do it. And if you know of a great business that should be featured on Ireland's Best Business Podcast, please do not hesitate. Tell us all about it on the website, thatgreatbusinessshow.com, or via our very, very, very busy LinkedIn page, I think we're now tipping 1,000 people following us there. Finally, my thanks to our sponsor, DeFactoShave.com, the world's best shaving oil. Try it for just 1 week, and like me, you will be a forever convert. So from the dream team, that's me and Susan Spence, thank you so much for listening.